Da 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 da.
Where are my headphones?
Where are your headphones?
Oh.
They're on the floor. On the floor they are. Good evening.
Hello. Hi.
Bought an Oktoberfest?
Let's do it.
Delicious green bottle, yes. The case was sealed up tight. I bought the whole case for the work exchange thing, so not much opportunity for this thing to get light struck.
I don't smell the typical light struck stuff. Smells okay.
Yep.
Isoprenol Mercaptan.
Yes, yes, yes. Got your yeast questions ready? Studying up on yeast,
oh,
saying
yeah.
Get your yeast
I
questions
should.
Ready?
I should, shouldn't I? So yesterday I went to the Oddball Fest.
The Oddball Fest. I don't know what that is.
That's, it's the Funnier Die Tour. It's like Jeff Ross and,
okay.
Christian Charles, but the headlining is Flight of the Conchords and Dave Chappelle.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And the night before in Hartford, apparently Dave had a really bad night. And he kind of like stopped the set. The crowd was being unruly. He stopped the set and just sat there, and just like wouldn't engage with them because they were just yelling out like "I'm Rick James" and stuff like that.
Those Hartford assholes.
So everyone was unsure of how he was going to react the next night in Pittsburgh. He was awesome. He killed. He totally destroyed. It was, you know, I was saying to Damien on the way home, it was like watching, I don't know, Mickey Mantle go 5 for 5. You saw one of the great players of all time have one of the better performances of his career.
That's cool.
It was a great night, a really great crowd. Pittsburgh really has a great comedy crowd. Lots of comedians will say that. I'm not sure why it is. But Pittsburgh generally draws a comedian-friendly crowd, a much more comedian-friendly crowd than other cities. I think it might be some of Pittsburgh's kind of yearning for a bit of culture, because lots of times Pittsburgh gets treated as sort of a flyover and not, you know, not a major destination.
Right.
And so when something like this happened, now it happened at the First Niagara Pavilion, which is out in the boondocks. It's like,
oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Star Lake? Is that,
yeah.
I mean, is that what Star Lake's called now? Okay.
So, I mean, it was funny because you have to drive, you know, 30 minutes outside of Pittsburgh to get to the Pittsburgh event.
Right. That's it's a big venue for a comedy event. Huh?
Yeah, like, there are about 6,000 people there. So, you know, sitting on the lawn. It's a pretty large event. Big amphitheater.
Yeah. 6,000 doesn't fill the place up, but still, it's just a lot of space for comedy to fill. That's the, you know.
Well, you know, I don't know how many tickets were sold. Just, I heard the number 6,000 band up. There were plenty of people there.
Okay.
Yeah. And,
because there's probably 6,000 seats.
Oh, well, then there was more because the whole lawn was full, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I mean, yeah, if it's full, you know. I don't know what I'm saying, but, you know, comedy is typically in smaller venues and whatnot, you know, and then when they do it in these huge open spaces, it can be more difficult, so.
Yeah, well, this was a big, you know, big comedy concert event type thing. Mm-hmm. It was really cool. The audience was great, and all the acts were Demetri Martin was there, Al Madrigal from The Daily Show, Christian Schaal.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was a really, really great show. And Dave Chappelle had some great bits. Like his bit about Paula Deen was really funny. Like he had this thing where he's like, I'd like to hire her as just a personal chef and just have her be herself and just have her run around my kitchen saying, I'm going to make you N-words this stuff.
Don't hold back, Paula. Just be yourself, not your TV self.
That was so. That was great. It was a really great experience, and you could tell that Chappelle, I mean, appreciated it. He was very spontaneous on stage. He made up a lot of jokes about what had happened the night before and how it went out. There was a lot of news stories about it, and he was definitely appreciative of the crowd for sort of, you know, being behind him all the way.
Right.
And all the people at, you know, at the show were saying that, like, they tweeted afterwards, you know, that the comedian said it was an awesome show and thanks Pittsburgh or Burgettstown.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, it was really fun. And I drank a lot of Miller Lite.
Started cheat day a little early, huh? So we got to wrap the show up here soon.
I'm okay because I didn't really have much to eat the last couple days before that. I've sort of been on a kind of a cleanse, if you will. So, I didn't have anything. The cookie was the first thing off diet I had today.
Okay. So you had two little partial cheat days,
yeah.
Split up by being good. Gotcha. So, I sent you the question, rubber tire, one molecule or not?
Right, yeah, okay. Yeah, you asked me about vulcanization, really, and whether, really what it gets down to is a polymer one molecule?
You know, right.
And or is it several molecules, multiple molecules? But it's kind of a philosophical question, right? I mean, it's something of a chicken and egg scenario. You can look at it one way, you can look at it the other way. I would say that if I had to choose, I would say, well, the problem is the concept of what is a molecule comes into play. That what defines a molecule?
Right.
So, you know, if I had my druthers by my definition, which I don't know if that's the standard one, no, a polymer is a chain of molecules that are connected together. So, no, a rubber tire is not one big molecule. It's a chain of molecules. And the reason why I think that makes sense is because you see the similar structures throughout. Mm-hmm. That it's not one big...
I mean, that's how I was... I actually had read up on molecules after this, but my definition is it's a chemical composition, you know, where there's chemical bonds, and when you break those bonds, it changes into a different material, you know? But I guess that's not exactly the dictionary definition of molecule. However, certain kinds of bonds aren't typically... considered like hydrogen bonds, you know, like the kind that holds water together,
mm-hmm.
you know, isn't typically considered a bond that makes the joined parts one molecule, right? You don't call a puddle of water one molecule because they're hydrogen bonds,
right?
And not other kinds of bonds.
Right, or you don't call this table one molecule just because it's solid.
Right.
But a rubber... is essentially, I mean...
So when you vulcanize rubber, you take the rubber molecule and a sulfur atom gets in there. And I didn't have enough time to figure out what kind of bond is between the rubber and the sulfur and the next piece of rubber, you know, and all that. But it's a repeating thing, right? It's a polymer chain. Right. And, you know, maybe this is just the definition thing, like planet versus dwarf planet versus, yeah. you know... Excuse me, those kinds of things.
That's basically a crystal, right? I mean, it's in form, if not...
I don't know enough about that. I mean, crystals aren't usually smooshy.
Right, well, it's a... Okay, maybe crystal is the wrong word. But
it's a definitely a repeating pattern of molecules all lined up, you know?
Because a crystal kind of implies a lattice.
Mm-hmm.
But, like... the metal in the, you know, aluminum is a crystal, or at least it's crystalline in terms of its structure. So that's why it's really good at conducting heat mm-hmm. and electricity. But yeah, you know,
there was a lot of, like, so if you search, is a tire one molecule, you'll find all kinds of articles saying it is. And then, you know, when you start reading the Wikipedia article about molecule, I was trying to, like, find in the vulcanization article, like, where they talk about this, but there isn't a section on, you know.
Does that mean silly putty is one molecule? I mean, because it's a big, long, extended polymer chain, that would imply that almost anything rubber is one molecule, and that just doesn't, I mean, it seems to be definitely...
Maybe it depends on the bonds, right? Maybe because of the vulcanization in this sulfur atom that's bonded in there is a certain kind, I don't remember all my kinds of bonds, there's covalent, there's...
I keep up on the high energy physics, but the chemistry I right. don't.
So maybe the kind of bonds in vulcanized rubber is
ionic,
is uniquely different than silly putty or, you know, other things that, yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah, I think it comes into a definitional problem with the word. It's the whole idea mm-hmm. that I think you hit it on the head when you said, you know, Pluto not being a planet. It is the same sort of deal. The problem is that the concept of molecule is just too big, and you need to either, you know, cut down on what you consider a molecule, or you open it up to everything can be considered a molecule, and then the term sort of loses its, mm-hmm. its meaning and purpose. So I would say in order to keep molecule as something that
but okay, so a molecule, when you add something to a molecule, it changes its composition, right? You know, it's a different molecule, right? So technically, vulcanized rubber is a different molecule. Maybe I'm talking back on myself here, right? Because rubber is not very durable. It's just spongy and gooey. It falls apart, right? Mm-hmm. You vulcanize it, it becomes very tough, very sturdy. Use it for hockey pucks and tires and everything. Mm-hmm. And that's because these sulfur atoms have worked their way in and are bonded there. So it does have different properties.
Right.
And I was about to say, you know, a molecule, you know, doesn't have... So, like, okay, so but, vulcanized rubber is a different molecule than rubber, but where do you draw the boundary? With two pieces of rubber with two sulfur atoms? Is that the molecule? Or is it a million pieces of rubber with 2 million sulfur atoms, right?
I don't know. When you dope a semiconductor with germanium or something, you're adding some impurities that actually cause it to be better for certain transmission of electrical signals.
That's just an alloy, though. That's just...
What's the difference?
They're... if I was a chemist, I could tell you. I would guess, now this is just me speculating mm-hmm. since I haven't had chemistry since ninth grade. You know, metal gets its... So it's that crystalline thing, right? Where they're... I think metal bonds are a different kind of bond than... I don't know. I don't know enough about it to speak, right? But what my intuition is trying to tell me is, you know, you just have a bunch of metal in there that's not bonded in any way. And when it cools, it gets locked into a lattice, right? But that's not a molecular thing so much for an alloy.
I mean, if you're defining a big vulcanized tire as one big molecule, then I think you can easily define a semiconductor as a molecule in the same sense. If it's just... the bonds that stick together.
Someone's yelling at the radio right now. Some chemist is listening. Didn't that guy that tweet us, wasn't he beer chemist or something like that? Or the guy's in Pittsburgh this week?
Maybe. And this is, this won't go out until next week. So, we don't know enough about this. I can feign knowledge about certain things in
like physics. Shooting people in legs.
Oh.
Greg got called out in email this week.
Yeah, no, Dr. Steve called me out about me basically, yeah, I don't know anything about guns. He's right. I don't know anything about guns. And so for me to make assumptions about what somebody should do in a situation, he's absolutely correct. I mean, there's two ways about it. He's absolutely correct. I don't have enough knowledge to make that kind of call. I was just working on mm-hmm. a base intuition that is probably...
based off of movies and TV.
Yeah. It's just incorrect. So, you know, so I will admit that, you know, Steve's right.
I do like what the... You know, we should take you to the range sometime. We should take you shooting.
I'd love to go.
Take Greg shooting. We'll have to do that.
I'm not a huge fan of guns in general, but I do think they are pretty remarkable engineering, you know, pieces of engineering, pretty remarkable machines.
Mm-hmm. I'll line that up sometime. I don't. So, I got, you know, handgun. I have a couple hunting weapons, but they're locked up at my dad's house, and I've always had on my to-buy list, you know, probably three or four spaces down the, you know, order of top priority, you know, a handgun. And, you know, it's been 10, 15 years, and it's just never made it to the top. So I need to give me one of those.
Why do you want a handgun?
Because I like shooting. We talked about this before. The marksmanship part of it.
So just for target practice, actually, for target shooting.
Mostly, yeah. I don't really have an urge to get a concealed carry permit. Not saying I wouldn't get the permit, but I couldn't see myself carrying a gun very many places.
Yeah. It seems like it'd be more a hassle than anything else.
Well, I mean, it's you like, have to conceal it, right? So, yeah. Like, I remember when I was, you know, 22, 23, going out with some buddies from high school still, and one of the guys was carrying, right? But he was all dressed up in a sport jacket so he could hide the holster that, you know, goes under your arm almost type thing. And, you know, I'm wearing t-shirt and shorts, and, you know, he's wearing a sport jacket, you know, so he could conceal his gun. Seemed a little overkill, so.
Why did he, I mean, what do you think the purpose of having a concealed carry permit is? I assume defense, but
I think the
do you think it's necessary in the crowds that you normally end up?
They're going down to the south side. I mean, someone who's a little less secure, a little more paranoid, could see that as a risky place to be, where you could run into some trouble. I think most of the people who talk about, you know, concealed carry is. And we've had this argument before. I really don't want to start the argument up. I'm not prepared to argue with this point of view.
I'm not looking to argue. I just want information.
But what I'm about to say is something that you're going to start arguing about.
Okay.
And I'm not ready, and nor is it exactly my point of view.
I won't argue.
All right.
I'll just let you say it.
A lot of people with concealed carry feel that when there is a lot of concealed carry, the bad guys never know who has a gun, so they won't be bad.
Right. So that's the sort of psychological reasoning.
Right.
But is that in any part of your desire to get a concealed carry permit?
That, no. No, I don't know. It just seems like a hassle. It just seems like a hassle carrying a gun around.
Yeah. I mean, just like it seems like a hassle, you know, carrying a taser around or something like that. I mean, I already carry around my phone and my keys and all the other crap.
Yeah. Maybe I'm ignorant to something that's going to happen, you know, all the danger all around me or something. But, you know, if I get, I'll get it, it'll be for the marksmanship, the target shooting, the enjoyment of, you know, the accuracy of it, you know, that kind of thing. That's why I would want to get, you know, a handgun, and, you know, maybe a good 22 is not a very powerful, it's not a very big bullet, but, you know, it's fun to shoot a accurate, you know, like match 22 or something. So, you know, that'd be something else to be on my list. Maybe something a little bit higher caliber, but, you know, then the ammunition costs more. So you can't really shoot 1,000 rounds of, you can shoot 1,000 rounds of 22 for like $40.
Mm-hmm.
At least I think that's what the price is. That's what it was. That seems reasonable from the last time I bought 1,000 rounds of 22 ammunition. But that's been a very, very long time. You know, where, you know, you get a box of 50, you know, 45 shells, and you're talking about almost the same price, probably, you know. So instead of 1,000, you're shooting 50 times, you know.
Frankly, I think that the whole concept of projectile-based weaponry is too old-fashioned. I want my laser pistols. I want my blasters. I know that we're never going to have them because we can't get the right energy density in a small space, and then have, you know, once we do that, then maybe we can figure out a way to have actual energy-based weapons. But man, would I love to be shooting a blaster. That would be sweet.
What's so sweet about that? Why is that so appealing?
I don't know. There's something cool about having that energy available to you in a really small, compact form, having basically a nuclear power plant in your fist, and just because that's what it would take to, you know, have that mm-hmm. kind of.
I mean, because a gun does have a lot of energy.
Yeah.
In a little compact cartridge.
It does, but, you know, you're dealing with old projectile-based things, and I don't know. It seems like lasers would be cooler. They make cooler noises.
What about smart bullets?
Pew, pew, pew.
What about smart bullets?
What are smart bullets?
Smart bullets are projectiles that have, like, that can steer.
How?
They have... I can't speak to this exactly. I'm not sure if they're fire by wire or what, but they have... They change their... I think some of them might have fins. Other ones might change their center of mass.
Because a bullet
themselves.
Rifles, I mean...
Right.
So if it had fins, it wouldn't matter.
Well, no. They're smart bullets. I'll research smart bullets okay. for you, and I'll explain them to you later.
Well, at that point,
they're cutting edge stuff.
At that point, it just becomes a little cruise missile as opposed to a bullet.
Well,
it's a little rocket, right? Basically,
it's still a. It doesn't continue to have thrust. It doesn't have a rocket out the. It doesn't have rocket propulsion.
It would have to if it needed to change its vector.
No, it uses air resistance to change its direction, like a sail.
But then, how does it stabilize?
I didn't invent them. I don't own any. I don't know.
I'm curious. I mean, is this just a theoretical thing, or is it something that actually exists?
No, they exist.
What kind of, you know, what kind of direction turns can make? Can do like the wanted shots, you know, where you shoot around corners and stuff like that.
Let's see here. Let's see what Wikipedia has to say about the smart bullets.
That seems crazy to me. Unless, like I said, they're, you know, basically they're fired from a rifle like weapon, but they're essentially individually targeted tiny cruise missiles.
All right. So the opening description calls them theoretical prototype bullets. Oh, theoretical and prototype bullets. So there are prototypes. The smart comes from the bullet doing something other than simply following its given trajectory, e.g. turning, speeding up, slowing down, sending data, etc. Pattern number 5,780,178 for the guided bullet is held by Roland F. Barrett, Jr. of North Carolina, USA. Barrett's the guys that make the sniper rifles. Mm-hmm. Let's see. 2012, Sandia National Labs announced self-guided bullet prototype that could track an illuminated target illuminated with a laser designator. The bullet was capable of updating its position 30 times a second and hitting targets over a mile away.
Wow.
So it's like a missile where it you paint a target and it can hone in on it.
You know, at that point...
I seem to recall that they changed the math, like... Imagine some kind of smart liquid inside the smart bullet, which can, yes, it's turning, but can change its center of mass, and that'll change how it
that
hits the air and stuff
that
like
work.
That. So,
if there is some mass differential,
mm-hmm.
then it could do. It would have to have some sort of mechanics inside the bullet, which would probably make it a much larger bullet than your standard cartridge. And also, it would be under pretty strong G-forces being fired from, mm-hmm. from zero to whatever. So the machinery would have to work through all that. It's pretty complex.
One implantation uses a muscle wire inside the bullet. The wire shortens or lengthens, causing the bullet to bend. Another implantation uses a spoiler and microgyro to control the bullet.
Yeah, so there's a lot of pretty complex machinery inside mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, not cheap bullets.
No. But that's how they landed Curiosity. They, as it was going down to Mars, they actually had some ballast on it, so that while they were in hypersonic
mm-hmm.
flight and they were they're going through peak heating and slowing down, it was actually doing maneuvers to get its landing circle much smaller than normal.
Okay.
And then they remove the ballast right before they shut off the parachute.
Gotcha.
So that kind of thing does work for you know, ballistic projectiles.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. Still, it's pretty crazy. I still would rather have a laser.
Pew, pew.
Pew, 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 pew.
Would they really go pew?
Well, no. Well, you'd have to put a little speaker on it. So
yes. What sound would a laser make?
Well, if it was a powerful enough laser, it would probably at least make a crackling sound because it would vaporize the air around it. It might even make mm-hmm. a thunderous kind of sound.
Mm-hmm. I think thunder would be a good way.
It probably wouldn't be as loud as thunder because it's not it wouldn't be as big as a lightning bolt.
It wouldn't. So no, it wouldn't. So you're thinking about electricity being thunder, but I mean a laser.
Well, no, thunder is not from electricity. Thunder is from, I mean, the lightning bolt basically
heating the air, expanding the air.
It heats the air,
yeah.
And then the air collapses back into the vacuum that was formed from that column, and mm-hmm. that causes the thunder.
Right. Yeah. So this would probably be just as hot, right?
So you hear at least some kind of cracking and.
Mm-hmm.
And probably some sort of small.
So where's the pew pew? Why does everyone? Why is pew 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 such
movies,
a?
Movies.
Why? But why is it such an appealing sound for laser blasters?
It's one of those things that you know when sci-fi started to be in movies, they came up with sounds, and you got spaceships sound like woo 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 woo, and you mm-hmm. had you know sciencey sounding equipment and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And they've decided
but
to make
pew 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 is so much better than zap zap zap.
Yeah, but it would probably be more of a zap than a pew. But pew it feels right.
Pew could be from think of a flash. You know when the capacitors are discharging or charging.
That's
you hear
kind
that.
Of a zzz, zzz.
Well, when you have a charging though, the capacitor you know will go. You know, like a flash for a camera.
Okay.
You know, when the capacitors are charging. So, like, after you shoot, you'd hear something more pew-like when they're charging up the super caps again, right?
But you still, I mean, even with the flashes, you hear, like, sort of a crackle. Just
yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe it's when maybe it's sort of the, you know, when
so
transitions
pew,
came around, they had
pew indicates a Doppler shift, right? So, you... If you were getting shot at, it wouldn't go pew pew. It'd go whoop whoop whoop. Right?
You know, we're if it's
serious, because pew pew is a Doppler shift. That's the bolts racing away from you. You're getting shot at. It's
well,
gonna
also,
be the opposite.
I mean, the thing is that
whoop whoop whoop.
If it's strictly an energy weapon, if it's strictly light, then it's instantaneous. And you wouldn't hear anything until well after you got shot. I mean, that happens with guns, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're far enough away, like a sniper is
right,
far enough
but not
away.
Everyone's going to hit you, right? They're all going to be start hitting the walls behind you and stuff.
Yeah, but you see like, light, and then you hear, shoop, 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 shoop.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know whether pew-pew makes sense for guns, but...
They're all, you know, the there'd probably be some... So, okay, so you got the thunder from the cooling air behind the laser beam, right? But then you got the laser, you got the progression of that thunder towards you at as fast as it can, you know, not the speed of light, but much faster than the speed of sound, right? So there's going to be some kind of sonic, would that cause a sonic boom? That the collapsing column is traveling faster than the speed of sound? What would that do?
The sonic booms are caused when the waves overlap.
Right, but...
So, but that's not happening.
No, it would be pulled apart. It would be Doppler shifted the opposite direction, so there wouldn't be sonic booms. Because there'd be nothing pushing in front, really, to push the sound waves. Okay.
And, you know, it depends on the diameter of the laser, all that stuff. And what would be... What's interesting is that, of course...
So the crackling would start out really... We'd get low and higher pitch, too, as it gets closer to you, because the stuff... It's going to get drawn out, right? So you're going to hear... You're going to hear the closest part of the thunder No, that'll go because you're hear the thunder from the bolt closest to you, and then the thunder's gonna, from the whole stream's going to catch up. So, and that's going to be stretched out. So it's going to be the Doppler shift. That's pew, but it's going to be thunder. It's going to be
And of course, you know, in all movies and stuff, people can even dodge lasers, but if you can't dodge lasers.
I wonder how fast a blaster in Star Wars travels. I wonder what that...
I think it travels at the story of the plot. Seriously, I mean, if they need somebody to get shot, the blaster is fast enough. If they need somebody to dodge it, the blaster is not fast enough.
Right, but I mean, in your average, I wonder if like the blaster bolts are animated to be at a certain speed, and I wonder how many feet per second those speeds are.
Someone
had to figure out. Let's go to the internet.
I doubt that was considered like when Star Wars was young, but I'm almost positive that for the new ones, they probably ILM probably did have some sort of metric that they use for, you know, for how fast these things should travel.
Let's see. Someone has to have asked this question. An analysis of blaster fire in Star Wars. Wired Science.
Of course there's going to be one. It's the internet. It's like Rule 34.
Lasers, they are not. I'm almost certain, that nowhere in Star Wars movies, even Episode 1, does the character refer to these as lasers. Really, there isn't much talk about here that hasn't been discussed 1,000 times before. All right.
I thought they called the thing on the Death Star a super laser.
All right, but that's not a blaster.
No. Well, blasters aren't lasers because they basically fire light projectiles as opposed to...
Like a photon torpedo.
Yeah.
There is a lot of science here talking about the blasters. Lots of graphs, lots of...
Well, it's also like a lightsaber. How can you actually do that? How can you have something made of energy that stops at a point? It projects a field out only to a certain point and still doesn't get away.
A special case, the Death Star. I am not sure if it shoots blaster fire or not, but I analyzed it anyway, and the Death Star has a diameter of 160 kilometers. Then I can get... Wait. It said, if the Death Star is 160 kilometers, then I can get a rough estimate of the speed of these things coming out as it destroys Alderaan, which is a peaceful planet without weapons. Here is a plot of stuff before it combines into the beam.
So that's the most ridiculous thing in Star Wars, then. A planet that has no weapons. Like, no one even thought of a board with a nail in it. They're just like...
It takes 0.2 seconds for the shot to reach the planet. If the speed of the shot is constant, that would make Alderaan... It keeps saying a peaceful planet. This guy's being a dick about it. Only 196 kilometers away from the Death Star. I'm not sure how big Alderaan, a peaceful planet, is. Okay, I'm not going to read this anymore because he's a dick. He has a real beef about Alderaan getting blown up.
Get over it. It's necessary for the story.
Yep. He's talking about why are the different speeds for the different blasters. No, I just want to know how many feet per second. Oh, wait, here we go. Ground. The average of these things is just 34.9 meters per second, 78 miles an hour.
Wow, that's slow.
It's really slow. This is in the ballpark of a baseball pitch. Compare this to the speed of a Nerf gun bullet at about 10 meters per second. So it's three times faster than a Nerf bullet.
You know, any major league pitcher can throw at least in the 85 range.
Yeah, so most of the hand blasters are at 78 miles an hour.
Well, you know, what's funny is you look at things like, even in movies that are supposed to be sort of contemporary movies that have sort of action scenes, when people fire rockets, they take 4 or 5 seconds to get from, you know, from the launcher to the person. But really, it's just like, bang, bang.
Yeah. I mean, if they made blasters as fast as bullets in real life, then it wouldn't be good to watch.
Yeah.
It would just be, it would look more like laser pointers, right? And, yeah, so I'm not complaining that blasters are only 80 miles an hour, but I had the question, found the answer. Thank you, Internet.
80 miles an hour. Jeez. It was less than that. It was 74 miles an hour.
78. Yeah,
you can dodge that. You can dodge a 78 mile per hour projectile.
Yeah, that's when you go get a gun, because blasters suck.
All of a sudden, you know, projectile weaponry seems like a much better idea.
See? You don't know anything. You're all lasers are cool. Pew, pew, pew. A souped-up Nerf gun can shoot faster than a blaster. A
super soaker might be able to outdo it. Did you see this thing about there's a new Grand Canyon?
Underneath Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw the headline.
Yeah, well, apparently it's underneath the ice sheet that's under Greenland, and it's longer than the Grand Canyon. It's not quite as deep. But pretty cool that, you know, we think that we have most land surveyed, and in some areas, no, we don't. And there's these huge, I mean, a gigantic, enormous canyon that's just sitting there, waiting to be discovered. It kind of gives you a perspective about how, you know, we've talked about it before. We're looking at, you know, alien worlds and exploring that, but we barely explored our oceans.
Right. Now there's a whole bunch to, the oceans are grossly unexplored.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of nothing to look at, but no one's looked at the nothing, and there's probably lots of good things that no one even discovered yet. Yeah, and, you know, underneath ice sheets and whatnot, sure, there's Greenland, you know, has like a mile thick ice sheet in places. Is this thing exposed anywhere, or did they find it with radar, or you don't have to look it up. I was just wondering if you knew. It's not because like everything's melted and it's there this summer or anything, is it?
I think it's not. It said the canyon cannot be seen with the naked eye. Scientists measured using several decades worth of airborne radar data.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, cool. I've been drinking a lot of water today.
Yeah, I was outside working all day and building the deck for the playhouse. So.
Well, we just built a spider robot.
Yes, we did. Allie wanted to get Greg something for his birthday. She made you a card. Explain the card.
The card was a beer bottle, but then it was on the back is taped random coins.
It was her idea, man.
At first I thought it was magnets. I was like, oh, I can stick it on a refrigerator, but no. Coins. All right.
That's how much she likes you. She gave you some of her money.
Wow, that's awesome. No, and then we made this kind of complex plastic beast of a robot together. And, you know, the kids were probably a little too young for it.
It was a little late in the day. They were a little punchy.
Yeah. And there wasn't much for them to do because it was complicated. And, you know, even I was struggling with it. Like, what do I
She put here? Together a few of the legs. Yeah. I helped. Yeah, I walked her through it. She had a good time. And then they liked watching it crawl on the floor.
Yeah. They can keep it. I mean, I'm not going to do anything with it. I mean, it was just fun to build it with them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There's a story going around because somebody released a paper where he said that he finds it credible that there was a panspermia event from Mars to Earth. That's where abiogenesis did not take place on Earth. It took place on Mars, and that we're all Martians.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting a lot of play in the media. We know that stuff from Mars can get blasted off and does hit Earth. That happens. It's less likely for Earth stuff to hit Mars.
Right.
It's not as favorable an energy system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you know, stuff from Mars does hit Earth. We know it's happened in the past. We have, you know, several examples of meteorites that are Martian, and we know that Mars had an environment that probably had water on it and better conditions for Earth than Earth did at the time.
You said he considers it the possibility favorable. Is that, that's how you said it, I think?
It was, yeah, I have to look up the story again, because
I mean, sure. And, you know, it's probably difficult to make something living out of an organic soup with electricity. You know, the odds of that are probably not that easy. But I'm not sure I would go favorable until we find bacterial fossils on Mars.
Yeah, I mean, we have
let's find the fossils first.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a huge amount of assumptions. I mean, I suspect that life probably still does exist somewhere on Mars, you know, underneath the surface, the same way that there are extremophile bacteria and stuff that exist on Earth. I suspect life is pretty much everywhere, that the conditions are even close to suitable for it. But that's just a suspicion. I don't have any evidence to back that up. Really, all we have is the evidence of Earth life and what Earth life is made of, and we see the same stuff all around, and we see conditions that seem to work for that. And it's not necessarily... So it's a plausible situation. Mm-hmm. It's not factual, it's just plausible. But at least it's plausible. It's not wild speculation. There's a plausible something to it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another plausible scenario, and part of this idea is that, you know, we see life come on Earth almost instantly, you know, within 300 million years after it cools down from the Great Bombardment and being smashed by Theia to make the moon and all that other stuff. And so I think part of the speculation is maybe life had more time to get started on Mars, skipped over to Earth, and then... And the evidence that would show this to be a reasonable case would be if we actually do find life on Mars and find it's made of, it has like DNA, you know, that's made of the same base pairs that we have.
Right.
That would be like, okay, we're linked.
Do we have, so, you know, the Earth cools enough, like you said, after the Great Bombardment. What was Mars's time like? What, like, previous to that? Like, how long has Mars been, you know? I mean, do we know enough about Mars to know when it cooled? When, you know, assuming that it... Let's assume it was kind of like Earth, right? So it cooled... How long would it have been
hospitable? Smaller body,
hospitable?
So it's going to cool a lot quicker.
Right. How long would it have been hospitable until Earth was cool, right? Those kinds of things.
Right.
Assuming that it was much like Earth, you know, that kind of thing. Just wondering how those timelines add up.
I mean, we know it was covered in water. We know, you know, it's a smaller body, so it's going to cool quicker. You know, it had a thicker atmosphere at one time. That's all been blown away by solar wind over billions of years. But so the idea, I think, is that life had more of a chance to start. It's sort of widening the clock back a little bit more for life.
Yeah, but how much? I mean, I know you don't know the answer, but I'm just curious, like, how
much? I would say
much?
Probably several hundred million years at least.
That's enough to do something, I'm sure.
I mean,
you just made a robot in an hour, so.
We don't know about abiogenesis, but we have the evidence that says that it's plausible that self-replicating molecules can form in these various situations that are made of the same constituents that we are. So while we have no evidence, we have a plausible action. It's sort of like when Darwin first proposed evolution. He didn't have real evidence for it. I mean, he had some evidence he collected, but he didn't have a huge amount of evidence for it. But it gave a plausible idea behind just creation. It gave a plausible explanation for diversity of life. And now we know it's absolutely true. At one point, though, it was just plausible. Mm-hmm. So what we have right now is the same thing with abiogenesis, where we have plausible ideas now as to how that sort of thing can happen. It's not that we have concrete proof, but we have some plausible ideas.
That's got to be a fun lab to work in. The guy's working on that stuff right now. I mean, I haven't heard any news about it lately, but I'm sure there's ongoing research making soups and adding electricity and watching what happens.
Well, I mean, the Miliary experiment shows that you can create simple amino acids from just from the interactions of various chemicals. It doesn't necessarily say that's exactly how it happened on Earth, but it does show that these things form spontaneously given, you know, given the right conditions. So there's nothing magical about proteins.
Right, but I mean, just like, even, you know, going beyond that.
We see complex proteins even in space.
Yeah.
We don't see, at this point, we haven't found anything self-replicating yet. But we've found things that come close, lipid structures and things like that. So there are we have, you know, this small time span that we've actually done research on it, and evolution has had and the universe has had billions of years to work on this problem.
We're able to eliminate a lot more of the trials than nature can, you know. We can say that ain't gonna fucking work. We're not gonna, you know, we're not gonna pour alcohol on this because that ain't gonna fix it. You know, no grain alcohol, so we won't do that. Hydrochloric acid, probably not. Fire, no.
I mean, I don't
let's
know.
Not incinerate this.
Nature can be sometimes remarkably efficient at evolution.
But how many things did it try before it got life? You know, it did a billion stupid things before it found the right one.
Well, you're personifying it to a certain point.
I am, on purpose, to make a point.
Right.
That, you know, we're able to pretty much say, let's not test these million things because none of that's going to work.
Right. Whereas nature is sort of just, well, This is what the situation is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what happens.
Right. I think it's time to drink some beer.
All right. Pew, pew, pew.